Mitzia talks about the Kenyan that's considered to be acceptable in the marketplace. Somebody would sell a barrel of wine and they would just make a roshem, make a mark on the barrel of wine that would be considered to be a sufficient designation in order to transfer the property. Or the Mefarshim talk about what has become the more customary Kenyan Situmta nowadays, which is the handshake. So a handshake, that's like shooting somebody. Nowadays, you're going to shake hands. It's gotten to the point where there isn't really a comfort level. We coordinate Kenyanim of companies. So here in Chicago, a number of the companies that even some, they have kosher certifications and the like. They have to sell their chametz or Pesach if they're owned by Jews. And we coordinate many such sales. And sometimes the entire, not only the chametz has to be transferred, but if the business is still going to be operational because they can't close down for Pesach, so then the entire business has to be transferred as well. It has to be done seriously where the Jewish owner who sells the business is completely not involved in the running of the business. If it's not his, he can't be involved anymore. It has to be sold to a non-Jew who's capable of running the business, like a manager, a controller, somebody with a significant position in the business who's capable of running the business over the course of Pesach. It has to be real in the sense that there has to be an accounting made after Pesach of exactly what the profits were when you take into account all the expenses and then the total revenue, what were the profits? And then after the calculation of the profits, that amount of money has to be received by the person who owned the business during the course of Pesach. The sale of a business, as opposed to the sale of the chometz, can be a mechira lezman. When it comes to the sale of the chometz, so that's supposed to be a mechira gemura. We say even matana menasa hachzir doesn't work with respect to the sale of chometz. It has to be 100% gomer, very clear cut and absolute categorical sale of the chometz. The business can be lezman. You're selling the business just like we lease our rooms. Only it's a sechiras lezman, because that's not the sale or the lease of the chometz itself. So we lease as part of the Kenyan chometz, we lease the spaces where the chometz is located, and then the chometz is acquired, number one, through Kenyan chatzer, and number two, even if the chometz happens not to be directly on top of any of those spaces, you can sell nechasim she'elem achrayus together with nechasim she'eshlem achrayus. You could sell metaltelin agav, by dint of selling the movable, the real estate property, or leasing the real estate property, so you can also transfer personal movable property, even if it's not directly on top of that real property. That's called Kenyan Agav. So in order to effectuate the Kenyan Agav, we generally lease all the spaces where the chometz is located to the non-Jew. That lease can be for a finite, definite term. You could say that it takes place the morning of Erev Pesach. It's going to extend until an hour or so after Pesach ends, Havlah. So that can certainly be Lizman. But the chometz itself is sold absolutely and categorically forever. And if the goy decides never to sell it back, so he's entitled never to sell it back. He'll have to pay the full purchase price, because at the time of the sale, the goy only pays a fraction of the price, what we might call a down payment amount, but that effectuates a king in kesef, and the rest is owed by the non-Jew. So often the non-Jew doesn't want to have to assess and evaluate the remainder of the chometz, so he's happy to sell back the chometz. That's what we generally assume will happen, but it doesn't absolutely have to happen. So we conduct all of these different sales. Number one, the sale of the chometz through the Kenyan Kesef and through Kenyan Chatzir and through Kenyan Agav. But one of the ways in which we effectuate the Kenyan is also through Kenyan Situmta, which generally is through a handshake. So early on in the season, we had the parties wear gloves, the Jewish seller and the non-Jewish purchaser, to effectuate the handshake. Then we got past the point where did not seem to be advisable anymore, so we changed it to an elbow knock. Then it was advised you shouldn't have elbow knocks either, because they started to recommend that when people sneeze, they sneeze into their elbows. So at this point in time, I actually discussed it recently with Rabbi Willig, who suggested maybe using a very long Hasidic shagartel. Use a very long Hasidic shagartel. It's like 6 feet long. And you have the non-Jewish purchaser extend a gartel. He would have to own a gartel to begin with, to the non-Jewish seller. Non-Jewish seller picks it up, lifts it up, makes an acquisition that he's selling the chometz on behalf of all of the sellers to the non-Jew. We'll have to figure out something like that. But certainly the handshake is completely out the window at this point in time. So the truth is, the Mefarshim say, the Mishnah Berurah says, that even if of all of the different kinyanim, you only ended up doing one of them, there are all these different kinyanim they recommended. There's the kesef, and there's the situ to the handshake. And there's the king and Suda, the lifting up of the handkerchief to evidence the Gemira's Das, which Rabbeinu Tam in Masechus Kedushin, Daf Gimel, indicates works with respect to a non-Jew. He says he used to do that all the time in order to effectuate a transfer between himself and a non-Jew. He would give a harsha for purposes of transferring between a Jew and a non-Jew, and he would cause the merchandise to be transferred to a king and chalipin, to a king and suder. So we see at least Rabbeinu Tam held that it worked. Others say that that a king in Sudar is described in Megillus Rus is a Tudabi Israel, works for Jews, doesn't work for non-Jews. Every single Kenyan, there's an argument to say that it works, and there's an argument to say that it doesn't work, which is why we do all of them. So the Mishnah Berurah, and we also do a king in Shtar. King in Shtar is also a form of Situmta. Shtar wouldn't work to transfer movable personal property according to halacha. According to halacha, a shtar works to transfer real estate. And real estate can be transferred through a kesef shtar v'chazaka, so it could work for the leasehold interest. But the shtar doesn't really work in terms of the transfer of personal property. But you can have a bill of sale. According to secular law, a bill of sale can transfer personal movable property such as chometz. So that's also a form of kinyan situmta that we employ of a medina de machusa. We call it's even stronger. Situmta is like, it's a custom of the marketplace that the sofim recognize. It might not necessarily be codified into law. Shtar is on some level even stronger because it's codified into law as what we call a kinyan of dina de machusa dina, or some machlokis, where it's the rice of the rabban, machlokis, where the rabban, kinyan of the rabban, and work for these purposes. Everything, as we said, has a machlokis. But the kinyan shtar, mistama, that you could do. What if you have a person who doesn't want to handle the same piece of paper that was touched by somebody else just a few moments earlier? Now, I mean, nowadays we have shilohs we never would have dreamt of having. So I added in my shtar for this year that this document can be assigned in multiple counterparts. That's a legal phrase, which means that if you have two people who are signing a contract together and one of them lives in California and the other one lives in New York, they're not going to be in the same room. They can sign two different counterparts, two different copies of the same document, and together they shall constitute a single instrument, and together they're considered to be one shtar, one holistic contract that is attached together as if the two parties have signed exactly the same piece of paper, because the two pieces of paper say exactly the same thing. So I think that's something that also will have to be considered for this year when it comes time for the actual mechiras chametz. Just, you know, unbelievable shilohs that we have to deal with. And we're still, you know, here in Chicago, in addition to the major sales of chametz that are being planned for the 13th day, the 14th day of Nisan and Yetzer Hashem, we generally do an early sale in case of people have chometz in the jurisdictions which are way to the east, for example, might be all the way in Eretz Yisrael, and we to have the sale that we generally do, you know, on Yudal and Nisan, which is, you know, the usual typical time for the sale of chometz. So we also have a number of company sales, you know, between now and then that we have our formula of how to do it. We have a Jewish owner of a company who will be going through the kinyanim with the non-Jewish purchaser of the company, both the company and the chometz being sold, and we have to walk them through by Skype these different steps and also make sure that the necessary social distancing requirements are kept and figure out which kinyanim, you know, are absolutely going to be indispensable. As again, Mishnah Berurah says, push comes to shove, when it comes to chometz she'avah lav Pesach. When it comes to the issue of not being allowed to derive benefit from chametz after Pesach, we paskin, like Rabbi Shimon, that it's a knas to Rabbanan, that technically chametz after Pesach is not asa ba'anah, it would be mota ba'anah, not like Rabbi Yehuda. We paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, the chametz after the sixth hour is asa ba'anah, midaraisa, Rabbi Shimon holds it's not asa ba'anah, up until the night of Pesach itself. And the only Yisra Hanah is during Pesach. And then there's the third sheet of Rabbi Yosef Lili, who says that there's no Yisra Hanah altogether. So we pass generally like Rabbi Yehuda, that there's an Yisra Hanah during Pesach and also from the sixth hour of Pesach and afterwards, Mechatzos and afterwards. So we have an Yisra Rabbanah during the sixth hour as well. And we pass in like Rabbi Shimon, that after Pesach, that there's no Yisra Hanah midaraisa. There's only Knas midarabanon chavish hamish shavah lava Pesach. So for the Knas the Rabbanon, of Chamesh of Alav Pesach, so Mishnah Berurah says that there we can be makel that as long as there was one kinyan that was performed, so that would be good enough To assume that you didn't have a violation of Bayirah Vayimatze, the Knas is based on the fact that the person violated Bayirah Vayimatze, and that will be good enough so that you could derive benefit from the Chametz after Pesach. So these are all things that we're going to have to think about. If you do one Kinyan, what's the best Kinyan? Maybe you could do two Kinyanim. The Alter Rebbe, Shneur Zalman, from the early Lubavitcher Rebbe, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch Harav, Balatanya, So he has, in his Shulchan Aruch Harav, a complaint about the way in which the Kinyan Kesef has started to take place. And it used to be, he said, you sold a certain amount of chametz at a certain price, the goy paid the price, and zeh. And there was a full payment of the with kesef for the chametz that was being sold. But as the amounts and quantities of chametz became larger and larger and more significant, so then the payment that the guy would make, it would be more in the form of a down payment. You pay $20, whatever it is, 20 rubles, depending on the jurisdiction, the time that we were talking about, and the rest would be zafen alav b'milveh. He would owe the rest. Which, as I said, would be another motivation to sell back the chametz after Pesach. He just doesn't want to have to pay the rest. So Shneur Zalman Lodi was concerned that in such a case you're a little worried that the person, the seller, is going to go after the goy for the rest of his money. So there's still going to be a sort of a shear. There's still going to be a remainder of the transaction of the chumitz, a transaction that hasn't been completed. You can't say it's a categorically completed transaction, and therefore you're going to be worried that if you don't get the rest of your money, so you're going to want to get the chumitz back. So your rosa b'kiyumo, you're going to want which is a problem, halacha l'maisa, if you want the chumitz to still be around, so you haven't completely disassociated yourself from your interests in the chumitz, which is why he recommended to be an Arav Kablan, to be a guarantor, a Jewish person who guarantees the rest of the money. So you're not going to be running after the goy, because you know you can get your money from the Yisrael. This Yisrael might have an interest in the chumitz being around, so that if he has to pay, he can then collect the equivalent of his payment from the chumitz, but it's not his chumitz, so therefore there's no issue. He goes, what do we care? We want somebody else's chumitz to be around. So therefore, Rav Shneur Zalman felt that if you're going to have the Kinyan Kesef the way that we do it, as only a partial payment, you should have an Arav Kabbalah. So the Babichers, very, very machmir about that. Here in Chicago, they're only interested in participating in whatever Mechiras Chometz gets performed, that there's going to be an Arav Kaplan. So it's also something we have to consider for this year. If you have an Arav Kaplan, so you have to make sure to have one more person in the room. And so that also becomes a consideration. How many people do you want to have in the room? You want to have the minimal amount of people and observe the appropriate social distancing this time around. So that also has to be nichnas l'tocha cheshbon in terms of the additional bells and whistles that we add to the transaction, that maybe this year it's not necessary to observe all of the bells and the whistles. I wanted to talk a little bit about the reason why it's necessary to have, you know, all of these, the steps that we take, you know, all together. It gets a little, you know, confusing every single year. Especially when you don't have the wherewithal to run around so much, you know, what are the minimum steps that you have to take? So there are three basic steps that are taken every single year in order to avoid the kshashos of chametz v'pesach, of being over and bayirah v'yimas, in order to fulfill the mitzvah tashvisu so mibateichem, mitzvah zeseh, of getting rid of chametz from your domain. And those three steps that we take are the bedikas chametz, which is the first mishnah maseches pesachim, all the abasar that we check our homes vigorously and rigorously and carefully for any chametz that might be there, so we can weed it out and we can burn the chametz. That's bedikas chametz, bio chametz. So that's the very first step that we take in order to weed out the chametz. Then we have bitul chametz. We have the nullification of chametz. And that's really, those are the two major steps that are spoken about in the Gemara. And then we have the Tosefta in Maseches Pesachim that speaks about this step that has become very commonplace for us, that has become almost second nature, that we do Mechiras Chometz, that we also sell the Chometz. And a number of the Meforshim point out Maram Shik and others say that this idea of Mechiras Chametz is also a form of Tashpisu. It's also a form of ridding ourselves of Chametz. You can get rid of the Chametz by finding it and burning it. You can get rid of the Chametz by being battle it, by nullifying it. And you can also get rid of the Chametz by selling the Chametz. The Baal HaMeor has a fourth possibility of how one can fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbisu, of getting rid of chametz. And this is also very important, you know, during this period of time when we have to eat, when we're in our homes and we have to make sure to take good care of ourselves. The Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, some of them decreed that today should be, since the Erev Rosh Chodesh, it should be observed as a Yom Kippur Katan, and as a fast day. And a number of the poskim here in Eretz, in America, including the Rabbanim here in Chicago, including Rabbanim in Los Angeles, I imagine Rabbanim in other locations as well, said that this year, I think Rabbanim in Baltimore also said something similar with respect to Titus Bechorim, this year, because it's so important for everybody to keep their immune systems as strong as possible, we want to minimize the fasting. We're going to make it easy for the Bechorim to do Titus Bechorim. We're going to minimize the fasting. We're not going to add a fast day at this point in time. Just like what we saw Solander during the cholera epidemic, during his time, told everybody that they had to eat on Yom Kippur. So Kal v'chomer, they told people they have to eat on Yom Kippur. Normally in Issacharis, eat on Yom Kippur because of the Sakanas Nefashos involved. And Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. Nevin has a Chayla Gimel Simen Sadial. We talks about this incident where we saw Solander. He says, we see from here that even Briyim, even Anashim who are Briyim, who are healthy and strong, because of the possibility that if they should become weakened in any way, that it could become sakanas nefashos, that itself also gives a heter to eat certainly b'shiurim on Yom Kippur. So too, even if people feel that they are otherwise healthy and are relatively robust and strong, you want to keep it that way during this period of time. So therefore, we've advised that people, you know, not fast. So this is also a kiyum, the Baal HaMeor explicitly says this within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. The Baal HaMeor is a very interesting version, which is not shared by other Rishonim, but he has a very, by most other Rishonim, but he has an interesting version of Rabbi Shimon, in which he says that when Rabbi Shimon says the chametz is mutter on Erev Pesach until nighttime, it doesn't only mean it's mutter b'hana, it's mutter b'achiva, that according to Rabbi Shimon, you fulfill after Chatzos the mitzvah Tashbisu by eating the chametz. That's what he says. By eating the chametz, you fulfill the mitzvah Tashbisu. So we don't hold that way. We don't hold that way within Rabbi Shimon. And we certainly don't hold that you could eat the chametz after chatzos. But in terms of the idea that the eating of the chametz itself during the time when it is permissible for us to eat the chametz during this period of time up until Erev Pesach in the morning, in the fourth hour when one is still allowed to eat chametz, that's also a form of tashpisu. You eat the chametz, so that could be a form of tashpisu as well. So the Gemara in the Pesachim Daf Vav and Beis asks the question, why is it not sufficient to do Bedikas Chametz? Why do you have to do Bittul Chametz as well? Because the Gemara says we should do Bittul. So the Gemara says, why not? Why not rely upon Bedika alone? So the Gemara says, Shem Yimtza Gluska Yafeh B'dayti Luya. That a person during Pesach or during the period of time when the Chametz is no longer permissible, when one would have violated Bayirah Vayimatzi after Chatzos, a person might come across a piece of Chametz, and maybe this piece of Chametz was two different versions of what we're worried about. Rashi says, we're worried that the person's going to have an interest in it, have an interest in it, and therefore he won't burn it right away. If he won't burn it right away, so he's going to violate Bayirah Vayimatzi. Sounds like if as soon as he finds it, he burns it right away, so it's not going to be a violation of Bayirah Vayimatzi. As long as, you know, he takes care of it immediately. He did his best to weed out everything before Pesach. He forgot something, but, you know, as soon as he finds it, he burns it, so he's not going to violate it. But he might hesitate because he might have an interest in it. That's a Rashi's pshat. Tosas gives a different shot. Tosas says that it could be that this was something that the person really liked, meaning that this was a piece of chametz that the person was interested in. The person never, you know, took it away from his, eliminated it from his thoughts, never banished it from his mind that he would have an interest in this chametz. And therefore, we might say that even without a bittul, something that a person has no interest in would be automatically bittul. But this was something the person really always was interested in. Ooh, he really liked this cake. He always was interested in it. So therefore, since he had an interest in it, we discover that it's still there. So that's going to create the problem that it never became batel because he wasn't mevatel it, and he wasn't bodek it. He didn't eradicate it from his midst before the time of iser set in. So therefore, it's automatically going to be included within bayiro bayimatzah. He's going to violate the iser. So that's why we have to do bittel. So the Ran, at the beginning of his commentary to Pesachim, asked the question, okay, so we explain why bedika is not going to be enough, and you also need bittel, but why not just rely upon bittel? Why not just have the people say that, oh, I hereby am declaring my chometz and null and void, kehefker, ka'afa de'ara, and it's like the dust of the earth, and just rely upon that alone, like we say on Erev Pesach, both the night of Erev Pesach and the morning of Erev Pesach, we have different lashonos of bittul, we nullify our chometz, so why not rely upon that alone? And the Ran gives two explanations upon as to why we don't really rely upon that alone. Number one, he says, maybe the person's not going to be mevatel b'leiv shalom. How do we know that the person's really going to mean it when they're mevatel? The chametz is sitting right there, so maybe they don't mean it 100%. And number two, maybe he'll come to eat it. Maybe the person will taco come to eat it. If you're, we're not worried about that when it comes to doing bedikas chametz, because bedikas chametz, the idea is you're trying to get rid of every single piece that you possibly can. It's just that, you know, maybe you'll miss something. Technically, if you really did a good job, you wouldn't have to worry that you're going to eat a piece of chametz. But if you're only relying upon bittul, well, we know you're not getting rid of everything. So then you have to be worried the person's going to forget and they might come to eat a piece of chametz. So therefore, in addition to the bittul, you also have to do the bedika. That's the explanations that are given by the Ran. The question arises, what if, however, a person did bittul? They actually, technically speaking, we just have these chashashos, maybe a person will come to eat it. We have a chashash, if a person did bittul, technically speaking, the chametz doesn't belong to the person anymore. So at the end of Pesach, if they only did bittul and they didn't do, bedika, let's say, of the chametz, there still is chametz around. Or let's say that they did bittul and they also did bedika, but the chametz is the chametz. But they find the piece of chametz afterwards. Are they allowed to eat the piece of chametz that they find afterwards? So that's a machlokas in the Yerushalmi. At least in the case of the person just did bittul, it's a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan says that and we pass like Rabbi Yochanan that it would not be permissible to eat the chametz afterwards. Ah, why? The person did bittul, so this is exactly what we're worried about. The person might count on the fact that he knows it's not going to be us after Pesach, so he has in mind the entire Pesach. Oh, I'll do bittul, and then I'll eat it after Pesach. What kind of bittul is that? Bittul means that you have relinquished all ownership of it. You relinquished ownership, so your mind can't be on it. So we're worried that the person's not going to do a bittul b'leiv shalom. And because of that consideration, which was one of the considerations that the Ran had anyways, why we didn't require bedikah, so therefore it's going to be us to eat after Pesach. This is all codified in the Shulchan Aruch. The Rosh quotes this Yerushalmi, and we pass this way in the Shulchan Aruch. But what if it's mamish and onus that the person really, you know, they thought that they were mevatel everything and they thought that they were bodek everything. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the knas of chametz shavah l'avah pesach is so strong that even if it's ayidei onus, even if it's b'shogeg ba'onus, nonetheless the chametz remains also after Pesach. So the Mishnah Berurah says, but what if his own is gomer? So he quotes the base mayor as saying, "Lakol onsin shavin." Not all of the onsin are exactly on the same level. If you have an own is gomer, the person didn't even have chametz. He had wheat. There wasn't chametz before Pesach, but some non-Jew, out of the generosity of his heart, decided he's going to take the Jew's wheat and he's going to crush it and make it into flour over the course of Pesach, and the Jew has no idea. He's sitting at his Seder. He's sitting, you know, taking his kids on Chol HaMoed trips. He has no idea what's going on. The non-Jew is crushing his wheat and making it into flour, and having the flour rise and turning it into chametz. So in such a case, the base man says, there's such an enormous onus, it wasn't even chametz before Pesach, so we're not going to hold the person responsible. It would even be mutar b'achila, says the base mayor in such a case. But that's where it wasn't even chametz before Pesach. But what if I have a case where it was, you have some Cheerios, and you have kids, and when there are kids, you're going to find Cheerios, and as well and as thoroughly as you look, maybe there'll be a little bit of, obviously if it's a Cheerio in a carpet, nobody's going to want to eat it anyway, but maybe it's a Cheerio in a bag somewhere, and it's a nice stash of Cheerios that was underneath some kids' underwear, and it just wasn't noticed. They did a very rigorous job of checking before Pesach. I remember one year before Pesach, I had to get my car fixed about a week before Pesach, and the car mechanic opened up my hood, and he said, you know, you have a roll, you have a loaf of bread. that's sitting in your inside of your carburetor and sort of inside of my hood. It was a loaf of bread. I have no idea how the loaf of bread got there. Fortunately, it was the week before Pesach, not Pesach itself. But most of the postgame don't recommend that you have to look inside the hood of your car. I have no idea how it got there. But anyway, go figure. So you may have like an onus gomer that, you know, you checked everything. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that this halacha, that even if it's ayde onus, shogig bonus, that it's still going to be us if the Pesach is only talking about when you did bedika or bittel, but not both, because it doesn't appear together with any context. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't have the context where you did both bittel and bedika. But if you did both bittel and bedika, that you fulfilled both sides of the coin, both sides of this mandate, and then something after your best effort, something shows up. So then he thinks that would be mutter. It's not included in the gezeira. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem to hold that way. But then again, even though the Mishnah Berurah doesn't hold that way, he does hold that lav kol onsin shavin, or at least quotes the Beis Meir, who says that, he quotes it favorably, the Beis Meir says that. So ulay yesh makom lahakil in these types of circumstances. But what if the person really does want or has in his mind that if the that some of the chametz which is in his possession now, he'd like to use after Pesach? So we said, well, bedika means you're going to get rid of it. Bittel means that even if you don't get rid of it, according to Paschal, like Rabbi Yochanan, you're not going to be able to eat it after Pesach. Certainly, even if we're making it an onus gomer type of situation, that's not something you can plan for. So what other resolution is possibly available? That's really where Mechiras Chometz comes into play. Because when you sell your Chometz, so then you're allowed to partake of the Chometz after Pesach. Isn't that Rotsa B'Kiyumo? The Chasam Sofer says the Rotsa B'Kiyumo only means you're getting a profit off of it. It's not getting a profit, it's just if it's around, so he's going to enjoy it. Also, it might not be considered to be Rotsa B'Kiyumo if you think about what the alternative is. The alternative is that the non-Jew is going to pay full price for the chometz, so the person's happy to receive full price. Okay, he gets the full price. The non-Jew who purchased the chometz decides that in addition to the down payment, he's going to pay the rest of the price for what the chometz is really worth. So matov manayim, the person will take the money and they'll buy other chometz. It's not going to matter to them, so it's not really considered to be Rotsa B'Kiyumo. So you don't have that problem per se. So the mechiras chometz enables the person to eat the chometz after Pesach if the goy sells it back, because there is a chance, since it has to be a mechira gemura, so the Tosefta says that it has to be a mechira gemura, therefore is not something that is, if you excuse the expression, it's not pas b'salo, it's not bread in the basket. The person can't count on having it after Pesach. The non-Jew can show up to the house during Pesach, take all the liquor, take all the Cheerios away, take all the chametz away, or even if he doesn't do it during Pesach, he can pay the remainder of the purchase price after Pesach, and the Jew won't have the chametz to eat. So therefore, it's not something that he can count on. And as long as the mechira is a complete mechira, so therefore we say that we're not worried about, there's not going to be any violation of Bayiro Vayimatse. Is no violation of Bayiro Vayimatse, since we assume that it was a complete 100% kosher of Mechira. So therefore, it can be relied upon. And when the goy sells back the chometz after Pesach, the Jew will be allowed to eat the chometz on Pesach. There's a big machlokes about what the order should be. Should the order of the bittel, should the bittel take place before the mechira? Should the mechira take place before the bittel? If the bittel takes place before the mechira, how can you sell that which were you already mevato? If the mechira takes place before the bittel, so you can't perform the and before the beer, before the burning of the chametz and so forth, so you can't destroy chametz that you no longer own. So what's generally the Chasam Sofer favored, that there should be the selling of the chametz first and then the bittel afterwards, because you can, first of all, you can carve out that whatever it is, at least in terms of the bittel, I'm sorry to say, you could say like this, and this is also found in the Bechor Shor, in Psachim Daf Chof Aleph, that let's say for whatever reason the mechira isn't valid. So if the mechira didn't work 100%, so then you have the bittel as a backup. That was kind of like what the Bechor Shor, you know, recommended. Others say, what kind of a backup? Obviously, what you're going to be mevatel is not going to be included within what you sold to the goy. But the idea of the Chasam Sofer is, no, it's a backup in case what you sold to the goy doesn't work. So then the bittel will work on that as well. That's the chametz, you know, that you don't know about is lo yadia, that is not the chometz that you're aware that you own because you thought that you sold it, so that it can be included within the bittel. Our practice here in Chicago is that we do the sale earlier in the morning, And therefore, we do have the bittel as a possible backup as well. Even though the general assumption is that the mechira is, of course, a valid mechira. You have a similar type of discussion with respect to the order of the burning of the chametz and the bittel, where it's recommended you do the bittel after the burning of the chametz, because if you do the bittel beforehand, so then the chametz that you burn is no longer going to be in your possession. You won't be fulfilling the mitzvah of bir chametz properly if the chametz has already been nullified by you. So therefore, we burn it first, and then you make a and so that the chametz that you're burning belongs to you, and then you make a bittel on any chametz that might still be yours that you don't know about that you're not aware of. There's a discussion, interestingly, that after the sixth hour, so we say that what if a person, I'll back up a second, what if a person decides, I'm not going to do a mechira. I know that Medina de Gemara, you have to do a bittel and you got to do a bidika. I did the bidika, I did the bittel, so you know, I don't have any chometz to sell. So the post can recommend you should do a mechira's chometz anyway, because maybe you do have some chometz somewhere that you don't know about. Maybe you own shares in a stock, and the company owns some chometz. There's a big machlokes a poskim as to whether you own shares in a company and the company owns the chometz, whether that chometz is attributable to you. Many of the poskim say if you're only a minority shareholder, it doesn't count. You don't really own the chometz per se. You own the right to profits and losses and so forth. But to be on the safe side, this way you sell anything that might conceivably belong to you. And also, as the famous No Debut that speaks about what happens if somebody inherits chometz. What if you inherited chometz? You didn't know that the chometz existed. You inherited it on the morning of Erev Pesach, and you had no idea. But the Maaseh, you didn't sell the chometz. You weren't mevatel the chometz because you didn't know about it. And you didn't do a bedikas chometz. So to be on the safe side, it's good to sell your chometz as well, so that it can include even chometz that you may have inherited. No Debut that works with the assumption, and this is a big machlokus, that if a person inherited chometz after Chatzos on Erev Pesach, when there would already be a violation by Rav Imatze, that this is not something which is bequeathed, because it's something which the Gemara says that to a based Varim, Chometz of Pesach and Chometz L'Achav Sheshos and Bor B'Shus Ramim, She'enim B'Shus Sheshos and don't belong to a person, V'Sal Kasav Gidu B'Shus Sheshos. The Torah made it as if it's in the person's Rishos, that they would violate by Rav Imatze. So no, the Rishos says, it's not really in the person's rishus, so it's only that we consider it to be for purposes of his violating the avera, since it's not really owned by him, because it's an issa hana at that point in time. So therefore, if he inherited it after the sixth hour, so maybe the person inherited it be in some violation, but he certainly wouldn't bequeath it. It wouldn't be mominous to bequeath to his children. So if let me say differently, if the person who died, the person who died may have violated it by having it in his possession after the sixth hour, but the children who inherited it at that point in time, so since it didn't really belong to the heir, to the testator, to the person who died, so it's not considered to be their mom, it's considered to be hefker, and they would be allowed to enjoy the chametz after Pesach. That's what the No Debut assumes. And the Mekor Chaim of the Nesivos strongly disagrees. He says, Akshave Rahman, and the Torah was makshivit, to consider it like it belongs to the person's possession. Adkidei Kaka, the person who owned it, who died, violated by Rav Imatze, but his heirs, who inherited it from him, so they would also have inherited it as real mamon after the sixth hour in Erev Pesach, whether they inherited it then or during Pesach itself, and therefore would remain and therefore would be forbidden. It would not be considered to be hefker. So there is a similar discussion. Then there's the No Debut that deals with the other questions of does the Isser get transferred, you know, to the Shukah? Because the person himself violated the Isser. Normally we say if the person himself violated the Isser, so then nobody's allowed to get Hanukkah from it. Even if it's not moment to transfer, so he deals with that Shaila too. This came up actually as a machlokis between the Ma'aril Diskin and Ratzvi Pesach Frank regarding the other case that's described in the Gemara, the Bor B'Shus Harabim. Let's say a person digs a Bor B'Shus Harabim and he dies, and then somebody falls into the bor and hurts himself. Are the Yorshim obligated to pay? Did the Yorshim inherit the bor? So the Ma'aril Diskin has a suffix about it. He has a suffix. Maybe the Yorshim inherit the bor. And the Ratzi Pesach Frank is noted to say no. He writes this in the Mikrai Kodesh in Hilchos Pesach. He says no. That just like the Noda Behuda said that with respect to Chametz Pesach Lachar Sheish Shos, it doesn't really belong to the person. Just when Issa, we impose an Issa upon the person, it didn't really belong to him at that point in time. So it's not really bequeathed to the children. The children therefore didn't really violate by Rav Yimatzi over Pesach. So too as well. And in the case of the Bor B'Rishus HaRabim, it's not considered to be mumminous. He follows the approach of the Noda B'Yuda. It's not considered to be something that was really owned by the person. We just imposed the liability because the person dug the bor. The children didn't dig the bor, so we're not going to impose the liability on the children. And it's not considered to be their mumon, and therefore they're not going to be chayiv if somebody falls into the bor. An interesting side discussion that emerges from all of this. But Lamaise, the Mechira, of chametz is not something that can be relied upon alone either, because we also, there was a big discussion. First of all, the Gemara requires that you do bedika, you do bittel. There's a whole discussion, mishabura. The person's not going to be in their house on the 14th night of Pesach, and they already sell it on the 13th day. So he says that you don't have to do bedika chametz because it doesn't belong to you anymore. But you can't be mevatel a mitzvah. So it's recommended that if a person is going away, this year nobody's going away, a person will be going away. They take the little chametz with them and have, you know, the 10 crumbs to spread out somewhere else in their hotel room on Erev Pesach, on Leil Erev Pesach, in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of tashbisu, of doing the bdikas chametz and doing the bio chametz, and of course a person should also do the bittel chametz. But there is room to be meko. And not to do a bedika of an entire space that a person is going to be leaving if they sell the space before the 14th night of Pesach. And if they're going to sell it on the 14th day, if they lock up a bunch of rooms and do the bedika in the area where they're going to be within, so that also can be considered to be a sufficient bedika. So mechira helps for all kinds of reasons, and therefore it's recommended, and in addition to the bedika and the bito, that a person do the mechira's chometz as well. The challenges of this year are certainly immense, you know, for all of us. It's important to remember that when we were in Mitzrayim as well, it was very, very dark and difficult times, and we didn't necessarily see the light at the end of the tunnel. But Kadosh Baruch Hu was able to take us out, Mishibu the Gula, Me'afela the Ola, Me'sar le Ravacha, and we pray as well that we should, number one, have the bitachon, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu that just as he has redeemed us in the past, so too he will redeem us again. We pray that we have the schus that this occur very, very speedily, especially as we enter into Chodesh Nisan, Benissa Nigalo, Benissa Nasidim Lihigayel, that this should be a month of Geulos, it should be a month of Yeshuas, it should be a month of Refuos. Anyone who was of a Chonav Swan afflicted should have Refuos Shlema. Everybody else should remain healthy. And everybody should have a wonderful Chodesh Nisan, and of course, Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so.